And you can change your plan up on the fly, which is, I find, really refreshing.
Charge the ion accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, We Are All Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Evening, everybody.
Tanya Gates and Red Powell.
Hey everybody.
Hey, what's up?
Everybody is back. This is the first time we've been reunited after the LVO, and we didn't properly gush over that event in the last episode. We talked a lot about world eaters, which we also gushed about. Gush blood.
Gush blood everywhere. It's blood gushing.
When I gush blood, that's exactly what it sounds like.
Especially when you press it out, because then it goes.
We're doing our own stunts and sound effects.
That's right. And those are actually from a soundboard. Those are not real.
No, definitely not. Not red with his hands like a child.
We should put that on the label. It's like, you know, number one podcast never soundboarded ever.
All home stunts and props.
That's right. Yeah. DIY, independent, except for those sponsors. Because the travel after the con, you know, here we are back together again. Let's talk about it.
Well, the sickness?
Well, I mean, the convention.
Okay.
So, you know what? We can talk about whatever we want.
It was me. I was the sick one.
And me too. I don't know if you could tell. I was soldiering on as best as I could, but I did not have much to give.
My voice was like, there was definitely like some sinus stuff.
Should we do a segment on combating the con crud?
Yes.
I didn't get it. So clearly whatever I did was right.
Just be a stalwart military son and just power on through. They can't even touch the pureness that is Red Pal.
If people lots need a water, reminder, wash your hands, you know, social distance.
Yeah. So I kind of cursed myself because before I left, it was like 2 days before I got on the plane, I was like, hey, I haven't actually been sick since November 2019. Haha, wouldn't it be funny if I got sick at Las Vegas? And then I got sick. So, yeah,
I mean,
it's
sometimes
fault.
It's kind of easy to forget that colds exist still, you know? It's
mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was considered like essential all throughout the pandemic, and I like worked through it and like didn't catch anything. And I was like, hashtag blessed. And then, yeah, no, just couldn't make it another year.
Nurgle just like shook his head, was like, uh-uh, not this time, Missy.
It's your turn now, sister.
Yeah. I certainly don't want to sidetrack the conversation, but you know, when we're talking about events and having people decide if events are right for them to get out to, you know, it could certainly be a consideration. So I was really happy to see folks at one of the largest events for what we do, Warhammer 40,000, Age of Sigmar. You know, we're going to talk a lot about the biggest Warhammer 40K tournament in the universe, but it's also the biggest Age of Sigmar tournament. You know, basically you name the game system, and it's one of the largest events of that game system at this big thing. And you're in, you know, a town known for its activities that have nothing to do with, I was going to say rolling dice, but that's not true. Or gaming, that's not true. Tabletop strategy games. But is that true? I don't know what to say here.
When I think Warhammer, my mind automatically goes to Nottingham, right?
Oh, sure. But I mean, like Vegas in general, we're in this thing, not categorically, you know, not typically associated with the type of gaming that we do. But here we are at one of the biggest events doing it. And it was awesome. You know, just you could tell that people were really happy to be there.
You know, the first thing that struck me when I opened up the main hall doors to walk in was like, there's so many people in here, but also like, it doesn't feel like there's so many people in here. Like, there was probably 1,200 people, 1,300 people in that main hall, something like that. But yet it's still like you still felt like it was a tight-knit community at the same time.
Yeah, you couldn't go two tables without running into somebody you knew.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. So you may find this surprising. I still get a little uncomfortable when people come up and say hello and that they listen to me or they like the show. I'm like, oh, You poor thing. Why do you put yourself through such stuff? Why? Surely you got better things to do, sir. Or ma'am. But then I walk around with Paul and I am invisible. It's lovely. It's like, he's like a beard. He's like a shield. And you just handle it so gracefully and so well. I really admire it. Everyone just comes and Paul just like, just turns on the bubbliness. Everyone just bounces off him and he just bounces off everybody. And I'm just like, skulking in the back like some ghoul.
You're very kind. Thank you. But genuinely happy to see people and to, you know, I mean, I know you are too or whatever, but to when they, you know, stop what they're doing and say what's up and that they appreciate what we do on the show. Yeah, that's why we do it. Well, I had to talk about wherever.
I mean, that's you know, how many games did you play, Adam, at LVO?
Zero.
Paul, how many games do you get?
Big zero.
Tanya?
Big ol' zero.
Me too. Okay. That's all four of us that an event that's entirely about wargaming didn't get a single game in, and yet I would do it all over again. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's so much to see and do outside of actually playing the game. It's pretty easy to fill your time in that convention space, even if you're not playing.
Yeah, absolutely.
God, and how many times did we eat at the at Flavortown?
Oh, man. Oh, here we go.
I was twice for me, but I think you were thrice or even four times.
It might have been. Well, it was always crowded, but you can get a seat at the bar. And that's what we would do. At least twice of the times we'd get there, we'd just like go and find a seat at the bar and then expand as people got up with other folks.
We did have the most American breakfast, though. Unfortunately, Paul, you were too busy being awesome that you didn't get to attend.
Streaming Sigmar. It was.
Yeah, we went on it was a good adventure. Oh. Adam, you want to detail our adventure? Because right. I really appreciate that you were the mastermind of this itinerary.
So Tanya and I took ourselves out for a fancy late breakfast at the beautiful French restaurant across from the Bellagio fountain. So you sit out on the patio. It's gorgeous. Great view. Great people watching. The food was fantastic. It was really nice, wasn't it?
It was. Best French toast I ever had. Staff was really friendly.
Ooh, wow.
Really
okay.
Nice company. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And we walked up and literally got a table within. I think we sat down at the bar and they said, well, wait, we'll get your table ready. And then we sat down at the bar and then we stood up from the bar and went to our table. That was it. And so I was like, oh, yeah, man, we'll take red. We'll try and get Paul to come if he can. And we'll take red and we'll see if we can do a, you know, forge an FTN brunch. And we went there and there was a 3-hour wait. So we go to the Italian place that is across the way from the French place. Still a beautiful spot, beautiful patio. 3-hour wait. Then, okay, as a last-ditch effort, after already wasting near half an hour, I go to a place that pretty much does phenomenal egg sandwiches. You know, egg and bacon rolls, egg and sausage, really like on beautiful brioche, fantastic, delicious, good sauces. So this is just like, this is the Vegas equivalent of a hole in the wall. Literally the Vegas equivalent of a hole in the wall. Couldn't even call it a cafe. 140 people waiting in the line for this place.
Oh, wow.
At this point, I am furious with Vegas. I'm hungry. I'm angry. And I am disappointed that I have disappointed my friends.
Oh, I was just happy to go along for the ride, honestly.
So what ended up happening? Who wants to pick up the rest of this tale?
Well, first off, I can't even believe that you forgot to talk about our Uber driver on the way.
Oh, my God. What did I describe Matt, describe him as? I think I've got it in the chat. You can keep going. I'll see if I can pull up what I said it was.
So we get this Uber. We climb in, and all of a sudden, I sort of knew all of a sudden, I was like, maybe this is a mistake, getting in this car, because the guy is, like, really boisterous and loud, and that's fine, but then before we even have our seatbelts on, he's, like, cutting people off in the parking lot, hitting, like, every speed bump at full speed. Red is, like, fuming in the back seat. It was just
I thought Red was gonna reach forward and just choke this dude out from behind, just like,
oh no, I'd never do anything like
put him
that.
Out
come on
put him out and then just gently recline the seat and take his place. Just I could feel it, the energy from behind us.
I can't believe you missed that part. That was the highlight of the trip.
Incredible. Where is it?
That's an experience. Yeah.
The dude was a swear word rock show wrapped in skin and not the good kind. That was my description of the Uber driver.
But all this, I mean, look at this. Like, just an amazing time together. Paul, I'm really sorry you missed it. You would have, I'd like to think you maybe would have had similar reactions as the rest of us. But
that's my element, man. I like chaos.
Yeah. It would have been. Yeah, I strongly believe, though, Paul would have found his food somehow. He would have known of a place or a thing or a time. Yeah. He would have just listened. He would have listened, and a taco a few blocks over and to the right would have just been, I'm here, and we would have gone.
But we made our way back to our hotel.
So we abandoned. We abandoned the strip and retreated back to whence we came.
However, all the nerds were playing war games, so there was no lineups to get into the restaurants in the hotel. So,
and where else would we settle with? None other than
the All American.
The All American, of course.
With the Canadian and the Australian.
That's right.
It was a good time. I had a Reuben. It was legit. The pastrami was mwah, chef's kiss.
Yeah. And I had the All American
breakfast. Yeah.
What was that? What were they calling that?
The All American is just it's just eggs and bacon.
It was typical breakfast items. Yeah. Hash brown or no, not hash browns. It was the of course it had chopped up potatoes. So
but not hash browns.
Right, not hash browns. No, I asked.
Hand fries.
Did y'all eat at the Hash House?
Nope. I did once. Yeah.
I did once as well.
It was okay. By the time I got there, it was late, like in the convention, and they were actually out of a lot of things, like the OVO had eaten them out of chorizo.
I had walked by and I saw somebody get like the chicken and waffles, and I was like, that is an American sized portion.
Messing around with that.
Yeah.
I got the chicken sandwich thinking it was going to be like the chicken on the chicken and waffles. It is not.
Oh.
So, cautionary tale. Go early to get the chorizo hash, because that sounded really delicious, although I didn't get it. And then don't get the chicken sandwich. Get the chicken and waffles. Make your own sandwich out of the waffle and the chicken.
The Korean barbecue in there was pretty good, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you didn't go to the Korean barbecue there?
I went to a place over near... I did have Korean barbecue while I was out there, but I went to a place outside the hotel.
Oh, okay. Well, I had a really good time, but so that was like one of my first experiences with that kind of. So Korean barbecue was like on my bucket list. I had wanted to experience it at least once, and the staff was really friendly in there. So yeah, highly recommend.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. There's a smash burger there,
which was delicious. Did you get the Brussels sprouts?
I didn't go with the Smashburger, but a colleague did.
It's good.
It's a chain. I think if I remember, it's a chain. So I was like, I don't want to go to the chain, please.
Wow. It's a chain that doesn't exist where I come from.
Oh.
And they had Brussels sprouts. So
I did get cheeseburger tacos.
Oh.
And they were pretty good.
Not sure how I feel about that.
Cheeseburger tacos, man.
That sounds very Tex-Mex.
I think that might be an insult to Tex-Mex, but
maybe.
But they were pretty good. Kim, the exterior shell was very crunchy. Adam, you had one.
I did. Yeah, they weren't too bad.
Yeah, as far as like a themed, I guess some kind of a weird vanity taco. I don't know what's the way to describe it.
If there's tacos, I'm getting El Pastor. That's it. Like that's the only kind of taco that exists for me.
Oh. Can argue with that.
Yeah,
like a taco preference.
Yeah, like Mexican tacos.
Yeah. So you jump, back to the 40K. There was Blood Angels 1. So what's not to like about that?
What do you think of the list, Paul?
List was good. I mean, list was fine. But talking about the list,
I guess it was okay. I guess it was just one LVO. No big deal. It was okay. I could have come up with something better.
Obviously, good meta choice, planning on facing orcs in the final like everyone would have,
There was, some crazy moments on the stream, too. Who's that guy who was like the first winner of like the first LVO and he like knocks out Vic BJ? He's like, oh, I'm for number one.
Who's that guy?
Who is that guy?
Alex Fennell?
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't know who each other was. And then Alex Fennell's like, oh, I didn't think I'd get here. Just pieces out the next day.
Dude, oh my lord. That was such a funny narrative.
It's so, so good.
So a past legend, still a very phenomenal, very astute and strong player, playing a current pole position to win the whole season. And they're playing on top table. We get them on stream because I'm like, that is just the past and the present coming together magically. Can't miss this opportunity. Alex beats him. And then the next day, drops out of the event. He's like, oh, yeah, just came to take the biggest scalp out of 1,000 players in attendance. And then just backs off into the horizon, just pieces out. And you're just like, good Lord, that is hilarious.
That is, I mean, he didn't get knocked out. He just,
he had a flight to make.
What was he planning on doing?
Not getting to the third day, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, to each their own.
Yeah. And it's funny because like they didn't know until, I guess, the post-game interviews who each other was.
That's funny.
Yeah. It was a really great narrative.
It's like he's just there to play games. You know what I mean? Like, can you blame him? Right? He just went there to have a good time.
No.
See everybody.
No, absolutely. Get his games in. Cannot blame him.
Just happened to knock out the top guy along the way. No big deal.
Yeah. No, cannot blame him at all. I think that's pretty funny.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Just going out on top. Be like, hey, came. I did it.
Just Dream Crusher Fennel, I guess.
Yeah. He definitely needs a like a super villain kind of level nickname, I think.
I met a listener or two that came out for just one day also at the LVO, just to come and see what the spectacle was all about.
So they played for one day?
No, they just came to hang out. It's basically I think they, I can't remember if they mentioned they did a class or something, but yeah, just flew out to see what it was all about for a day.
Interesting, because there were some one day RTTs going on too, for like almost every game system, which was kind of interesting.
I don't think they played any games.
Interesting. I mean, like I said, there was so much stuff to do there. That, I think, is actually probably the most surprising thing for me, is because a lot of the times when you sort of travel around in Warhammer-related circles, like, that's what you think is at Las Vegas Open. And then you get there, and there's so many other things to do that was just a big shock for me. You know, like the painting classes, there was like demos from the different vendors, like demonstrating their products and things. That scavenger hunt was really fun. There's just like a lot of stuff to see. Like I would definitely, if I lived in the area, just pop out just to see what was there.
Yeah. They flew there, which was awesome. I'm actually very happy I ran into them just by complete happenstance. I mean, we were at the bar eating tacos and, you know, so that's where you're likely to run into me. But
wherever there are tacos, there is Paul.
But I was happy to run into them.
Did they come over to you and they were like, are you Paul?
Oh, no, did not at all. We just happened to sit next to him.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Just struck up a conversation. You know, like you do. It's a social thing. So.
I think it's really funny. So I didn't really get recognized by that many people. And then when I did get recognized by people, it was on the day that I didn't wear long sleeves. So I'm thinking that I'm only recognizable by my tattoos. Which I find really interesting, because this is all audio, but yeah.
Well, you got your channel on YouTube, right?
Yeah, I think most people recognize me from Play On, though.
Maybe so. Mm-hmm. And also,
I just thought it was really funny that, like, for the first 4 days, 3 days that I'm there, like, it was really nice to just get to be, like, totally anonymous and just, like, experience the convention, you know, get the view that anybody else would get. It was really actually quite nice to just disappear in the crowd.
I like seeing just all the different hobby on display, all the armies, you know, people just really there to show off things they've been working on for a year or more.
Well, some of those display boards are just phenomenal with like the lights, and some of them make noise. Like, somebody had, I think, I'm not sure, it might have been Underworlds. It was one of the smaller game systems. And they had a tiny display board that was like undersea themed with lights, and it played music, and it was amazing.
That seems pretty cool. What would you know? Remember what army they were playing?
I think it was. It wasn't Underworlds. It was for Kill Team, and they were playing Tau because I made a comment. It was because they were fish people.
There you go.
Yeah.
On the Sigmar side, I know we talked a little bit about it, you know, the dramatic finish, but I don't know if we described how. So how that worked out was these players playing great games, like people cheering for the other players on both sides. And it comes down to like the last turn. They both have three models left on the table, like max between the, like, I think there might've been actually just three models left on the table at the end. And there was a chaos spawn that charged a goblin shaman and didn't take it out. And so they thought that they just canceled each other out as far as controlling an objective goes. And they were ready to call it. Call it, Iron Jaws player wins, Beast of Chaos just defeated, you know, everything. The fact, though, is that the shaman doesn't count as two models. It's a four wound hero character. And so the spawn did count as two models. And so actually, it flipped the objective, chaos player wins. And this all got discovered by, you know, people watching the stream, communicating with the judges and the players on site, because they were mentioning stuff, they were messaging the players like, yo, you're forgetting the stuff or whatever. And so it was instantly corrected. How it came across a little bit on the stream was, it looked like the players were just trying to kind of hurry up and talk through the last turn. They didn't actually play it out. It just didn't work out the way that they thought. And neither one of them recognized the error that they were making.
It's pretty funny.
I mean, the adrenaline was high. You know, everybody's playing for, you know, trying to play their best, and they're trying to get it exactly right. And thankfully, you know, before any trophies were awarded or winners were crowned or, you know, whatever announcements were made, it got figured out. And I tell you that it didn't diminish the shine of either one of those players and the smiles. They were very happy to have gone through that experience together. I mean, they get the player in the tournament itself. You don't want every ending to be a dramatic ending. Sometimes you just want to like win and get on with your life. but that was, they were going through so fast because they knew exactly what they were doing. It kind of, you know, looked, may have come off across a little bit different on camera. And I got to apologize for that because they were moving pretty fast for me to even keep up. But it was roll over there, run over there, do the attacks, fail the attacks, handshake, you know, start high-fiving each other. But it's thankfully was caught. And, you know, I tell you, it was a much different enthusiasm over on the Sigmar side. They got a good culture of players and stuff over there. At all ends of it, from the very competitive to the more casual, you know, every table, the 300 something tables or whatever, what was it? 170 something tables, almost 200 tables of players. It was pretty spectacular.
I can say that, so Jiwan Noah Singh is the one who was playing Beasts of Chaos, I believe.
Yep.
And I will say that I've played him once, and I don't think I have learned more in any other game of Age of Sigmar than that game that I played with him.
No, he really was good, and is good. And seeing Scooter play, Nicholas play, was fun, was incredibly fun to watch. And we almost had like a brother on brother showdown, you know. And one of the neatest stories of this is that the top four of the LVO were also the top four of the Nova Open.
Oh wow!
They were not playing each. It wasn't the same matchups as the semifinals, but it's still the same players, which is pretty cool.
That is wild. 350 players at LVO?
I think it was 320 something.
Not freaking bad.
A lot of times 40K players like to, give Age of Sigmar players a tough time. They sometimes think that Age of Sigmar is maybe not as tactical of a game or something like that, but I don't know. To me, it is a very good game, and if the game itself wasn't tactical, why would we be seeing the same faces at the top of these major events all the time?
You could extrapolate that to poker as well, like to any game where you think there's some luck involved or whatever. Well, then why are the consistently the same people, the same names?
It's all luck. It's a dice game. Chalk it up to whatever you want. But definitely, these players aren't good, trained professionals getting better, practicing. None of that.
Yeah, none of them practice multiple times a week. No.
Just luck.
Yeah, great point. That's one of the things we try to tell folks is like, exercise, you will get better. You'll know, these situations that are uncommon and rare to you will not become common and rare, and you'll know exactly how to react. And again, these players again and again and again, and you see it, you know, one, they also had gorgeous armies.
There does seem to be more faction experts, I think, in Age of Sigmar. And I'm not sure if that's because it's built into their hobby community to have those higher hobby goals. But yeah, I think most of those top players kind of specialize, if not in one faction, then in one super faction.
I don't think you have to, you know, look, sometimes we advocate meta chasing as self-proclaimed meta chasers sometimes.
Well, speak for yourself.
But you don't seem to have to meta chase as often on the Sigmar side.
No, I think there's less bad matchups for each faction, if that makes sense.
That's good. Mm-hmm. I like the concept of, well, not to take us too far off of a mark of like what the difference between 40K and Sigmar are, but the way that you kind of choose your missions and your secondaries rolling throughout the game is pretty interesting. It seems like you can maybe better adjust on the fly a little bit different than 40K. That may contribute to the meta chasing kind of thing.
Yeah, so like if you lose sort of maybe more heavy-hitting elements to your army or whatever, you can choose your battle tactics the next round that you'll be more easily, will be more easy for you to get even without those key elements of your army. So even though you lose stuff, you're not sort of totally out of the point scoring game. And you can change your plan up on the fly, which is, I find, really refreshing.
I got to see some great plays of generals where they would see themselves in a bad spot, and so they, on a round they knew they weren't going to score really any points at all, that's when they would pick their tactic that was least likely to score them any points later as well, and just kind of burn it, move on.
Yep, I mean, I've definitely done that before.
There is something to be said, and I think this was the same for fantasy when it was, you know, still the thing before AOS. When you have a game that's the damage and the removal of models is fundamentally done in the shooting phase, as in it's a shooting mechanic, I think, done from distance, you tend to have way more swingier opportunities. At least that's the perception. Like, especially when you have a shooting game. Well, I don't want to say, because both games, both systems are based around movement. That is the most important part of any game that we discuss on this show, pretty much. But when shooting is the incentivized phase in which you do damage for the majority of armies, there always seems to be more blowouts. At least that's been my experience in, you know, almost a decade of playing at a very high level in whichever game I'm into, whether it was either fantasy, now Bitter Heresy, and mostly 40K. It always seems to be the case. Is that something that resonates with you guys?
I'm not sure that I have enough experience with any one system yet to like make a judgment call like that.
That's fair. What do you think? What do you think, mate? You usually play a melee-based army. Do you find that?
Well, I prefer to play melee-based armies because I like to interact in that phase. I find that the blocking and tackling and the interactions and the micro movements and that kind of stuff during those types of interactions a little bit more exciting to me than, but I also helped architect like leaf blowers and, you know, that kind of stuff. So like I find it less interactive, which typically leads to less enjoyment for my opponent and myself.
I mean, that's another good way of putting it. I suppose blowout isn't the word. It's just kind of can get to an overwhelming, sometimes unavoidable, feels bad.
Yeah, but Sigmar seems to be kind of lined up to where that most armies have the ability to do that type of thing, and the shooting rules are way different in that game than our Warhammer. So what I've learned, and maybe this is like a testament, or maybe not testament, testament's too strong, maybe a reflection of why the Sigmar players seem to be kind of having a better time, is because there's almost an inherent go with the flow, sometimes you're going to lose a lot of models aspect built into the game itself, like the core aspect of the game, and every army has that. And every army can still participate in the game, even when they are struggling to keep models on the table.
Yeah, and I have actually found with Age of Sigmar that there are a couple of shooting armies. There's one in particular that sometimes its build is like non-interactive, but in order to play that build, it's really hard to actually score points in the game. So it kind of has these like give and take components to it, as from my limited understanding of the game anyway. So maybe that's how they balance those mechanics. I'm not sure.
I think one thing, you know, there is an assumption here, right, to a certain extent that I do understand that people did, you know, have moved to Age of Sigmar, and I'm not saying anything necessarily against that, other than I do think that there's such a myriad of different games, right? There's Kill Team, there's Age of Sigmar, there's Warcry, there's, you know, you go down the list, there's Necromunda. I actually think that GW and a lot of these other war game companies have actually broadened to such an extent that they're hitting different niches of war games for different players, and that people are finding games at different paces that they like to play. I think that it's okay to like Age of Sigmar style versus more than 40K. I'm cool with them not being the same game, just different settings, if that makes sense. And I think that it's actually really good how they've gone about applying some of this. You know, they're clearly from LVO, there's more than enough people playing both games. That it's, you know, it's while there might have been some distraction from 40K as people found that they liked Age of Sigmar more, I don't think that's necessarily to the detriment of 40K, if that makes sense.
Yeah, great points. But I think they're just two totally different things at this point. They really are.
Sure.
A different experience, which is cool.
I mean, I suppose that comes back to the expectations of the player base. I mean, it is a good thing for GW to have, for there to be variety of systems. I mean, here's a shooting-based skirmish game set in the 41st millennium. Here's a shooting-based skirmish game set in the Mortal Realms. You know, no one wants that. That's just the same thing with different models. Nobody's happy with that.
I'm really excited that there is something different, right? Because there are certain aspects of 40K that I find really hard to navigate right now. Mm-hmm. So having something completely different to turn to and sort of like reevaluate where I want to sort of spend my hobby time has been really good for me. I'm glad that I have something different to try out. And honestly, I think this little foray into playing Age of Sigmar, when I do decide to come back to 40K, I think it's going to make me a better 40K player.
Nice.
Because I think that the double turn and like the flexibility of playing Age of Sigmar, I think it's going to actually help me to be more flexible on the 40K table as well.
My double turn is rough.
Is it though? You guys always say that.
I don't know if I've come to peace with it. Yeah. But, you know, where I will say though is that almost every army over there on the Sigmar side has some type of like special trick or things that can make it unique or can withstand the double turn or has some gotcha that it can whip out even when they got the last turn. You know, there's some good design over there.
Yeah, I agree. And just like there's good design over there, there's good design in 40K too.
Oh yeah,
and
for sure.
In Warcry and all of the little specialty games too.
But there's enough in it to make it unique and where you get a much different experience, like we're just talking about, than just playing a similar game with different models.
Because that would be silly.
It'd be boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can still use your demons over there. But they work differently. Like we saw on the stream, we saw an army that was summoning Lords of Change.
Amazing. Yeah, what's wrong with that?
I mean, nothing. They got beat eventually. You know, so somebody figured out how to crack the code.
But summoning Angron. Now, how about that?
You can summon him after he's died once.
Is it summoning or is he just too angry to die?
A little spiteful.
Yeah, I think he definitely dies. He just comes back. Still spiteful.
Like a big jerk. Let's take a break. Then we'll come back, wrap this segment and show up. We'll see you in a minute.
See ya.
Oh boy.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Everybody, we are back. Still riding that glow from the LVO.
Ooh, that rhymed.
It was very nice.
We talk for a living.
Well, you do.
So last week we talked about the World Eaters. And now we've had a little bit of time to kind of simmer on it. What are y'all's thoughts?
Yes, I've done a bit of analysis on what they got, and it's you wouldn't call it a full. It feels like it hasn't got enough pages to be called a codex, but it's wrong. That impression is wrong. It is enough to be a codex because they have all they need. It's really quite interesting how lean the rule set is, but yet how much usable stuff they still have. I will say, I'm not sure I like any of the listed like three Warlord traits and relics, but I've loved the stratagems. I think their stratagems are cranked. And when people go, oh, they only get one page of stratagems and the other one has to be an army of renown. How many stratagems do you use of the 30, 35, 40 even that you could have available to you? I'm guessing it's about 5. And guess what? World Eaters have literally like 4 top tier stratagems and a couple, like 2 situational ones. It's pretty much the same amount of strats everyone else has got because you're going to use about the same amount. So people who've been complaining that they didn't get enough, I think they're fine. I would have liked a little bit better of like 1 or 2 Uber relic and or Warlord trait, because I think they got one good one, and that's the one on the Lord Invocatus. Have you guys heard about this one?
Oh, hit us.
You're talking about the – yeah, oh, yeah. His is good. Go ahead.
So at the start of turn one, after you find out who's going first, Lord Invocatus and 2 Moon units just move. they just go get him, boys. They just go after it. They just move, and Lord Invocatus gives a bubble of extra movement. So you just get to have – essentially, it's very close to a – you know, a Forlorn Fury that a Death Company get to do, but this is just a Warlord trait that you get for making for the purchase price, and you get to use it with 3 units, like yourself, the Lord Invocatus himself, and 2 other units. And there are other some really interesting caveats on this. There is no limitation on not coming within 9 inches of enemy models or 9 inches of their deployment zone, should you be able to get there, which I don't think realistically any of the units you're going to use it on can move that far. But it's interesting. Like, if I put out infiltrators, you could just walk right up to him with that move. With that scout move, you just walk right up to him and be like, hey, mate, then you move again to start of turn one and just auto charge. It's quite interesting.
I thought we made a pact that we were going to call him Lord Avocado.
Who made that pact?
I'm sorry.
Nope, that's a bad pact. Put the blood back. Don't call him Lord Avocado.
It's too late now.
Dang it. All right. Well, I guess I'll since we can't put it back.
These are your guys, Red. I won't make you do that.
Man, Lord Avocado. Give me a break. That guy flies, man. Fly. Flying juggernaut with chainsaw face.
Does move 12.
Yeah, and he flies.
And he's got a chainsaw face.
He's got a chainsaw face.
There's all sorts of winning we just went through right there.
He does fly. He has fly keyword.
It's crazy.
The road of the 8 bloody steps at the start of the first battle round before the first turn begins. You can select up to 2 friendly World Eater core units within 9 inches of this warlord. This unit and the selected units can each make a normal move. That's pretty strong.
It's very strong.
So what are you not digging about the relics and stuff?
I just don't think they're better than that. They're so much better than a stratagem that you would give up the CP for them. That's pretty much where I'm at. They're not bad. They're not actively bad. But the fact is how much power you get out of stratagems makes me want to prioritize starting and having CP and maintaining the gas I get from the CP all game.
Yeah. I mean, the skull, the reroll on the wounds with the skull of Angrant is pretty good to me.
Yeah, it's on one thing. I suppose should you be playing in a environment where your opponent has, you know, one big unit of Deathwing Terminators or something of that ilk, absolutely sure. It might make the cut for you.
Well, it is in the command phase, so you get to select, if the guy or the model lives, you can keep selecting different models. And, you know, for me, when I'm playing big smashy characters, it's like a real demoralizing experience when they don't connect and do what you want them to do. And I'm in a little bit of built-in insurance of being able to reroll the wound roll. I like that.
I just had a game. So I just played Skari. I'm sitting in one of the bespoke rooms at the mini wargaming bunker right now.
Oh, nice.
Which is kind of a phenomenal, you know, tick box punch bingo.
What are the themed out? They got a cool thing up there where it's like all themed and different styles.
I'm in the essentially, I think, what's the name on the door? Sorry, I'll just open the front door. I think it's the officer's quarters, Imperial Officer's Suite.
Is that the one with like the 2 sets of bunk beds?
No. I fished out for the adults room and I got the one with the queen with the double bed. Scary's the scarred one himself is down the hall in one of the bunks.
Did you tell Dave that you're doing this show? Do you want to come on?
I haven't seen Dave. He hasn't been here yet. I would 100%. 100%, I would have lined it up if I could. So me and Skari just played a game, and he was playing his Drukhari, of course. And his succubus, the Triptych Wick succubus, has 10 attacks, charged into 5 assault intercessors. Should be easy work, right? Hitting them on 2s. I transhumaned. Yeah, transhumaned. He got 8 hits. No wounds, because I transhumaned. I diced up that succubus like it was next, like tomorrow's dinner.
Wow.
Straight in the box. And it really was a big deal in our game. Like, it was a big swing. I still went down. Skari still beat me pretty well. But, yeah, it was a big deal. Like, these things, they just happen. And although that succubus is ludicrously cheap for what you get, it's still like a really impactful thing. Well, and you talk about, well, doing that with like a that happens when you got like a demon prince or...
Yeah, or Dante or whatever. That's what I'm referring to. Yeah, some Mephiston rolls in and it's like just happens to break that one time. Yeah.
Just bounces. It's a big problem.
It's feel bad. So and maybe, you know, what do they say? Don't let the past necessarily influence what you do in the future, as long as you made the right call at the time. Mm-hmm. But still, this is attractive to me because how often it seems to work out. And maybe that's because you're expecting too much of your characters, like throwing them into knights or whatever, not always the smartest thing, or Lanrit, you know, what you're using them to do probably could be better solutions for that. But if you're expecting that type of thing out of a character who's got, you know, not the top end of most strength or whatever, I would be looking at that going, I want that insurance.
Mm.
Yeah, we'll see. Again, looking at these, but I can see where you're at though with the relics not being as exciting as maybe some others you've seen out there. Like, yeah, that was an aura of reroll wounds. Sorry, Tanya.
I'm really excited for this codex, and not because it's like a faction that I have any desire to play whatsoever, but to me, from what I've seen of this codex, it has just a pleasant amount of rules in it. Because that was one of the issues that I had picking up the new guard codex. I just looked at it and it was like everything from my old guard codex times 3. It was just like all these extra rules. And I just found it really quite overwhelming. But if going forward that World Eaters Codex is sort of like the blueprint for what's going to come later, that makes me very excited as a more casual player that like that barrier to re-entry might someday be lessened, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah, I can see where that's coming from.
I mean, so there are some things about our great game and games that possibly could be deemed bloat. And I don't mean as in like their supplements and FAQs and things like that. I mean, just like you get a codex. I don't love how much there is in a book, like how much awesome stuff. T-Sons would be a great example. There are, I believe there's all 9 cults of the T-Sons have a rule set of some description, a small amount of rules in that book. I believe it's a great disservice that I only know about 2 of those. I can name and describe the rules for 2 of those cults of the T-Sons, because the other ones just literally aren't worth knowing. And I feel like I would love to see either a rule set designed to make all of those things enjoyable, flavorful, and worth using, worth knowing, or to just trim the fat and make a couple of rules, a couple of little bits of spice to make it exciting, and that's it.
Yeah, there we go. I think that when you, like you mentioned earlier, the 5 stratagems or whatever that you normally use, and you mentioned transhuman, I'm like, well, you know, that's 1 of your 5.
Exactly. You know, we talk about core memory as a core stratagem right there.
Yeah. And I mean, like transhuman is in everybody's core 5.
But on the other side of it, though, we often talk about efficiency and I'll say power. Like an overall raw power and stuff. And not every player is concerned with that.
Mm.
And while I agree with you. I know what time, I know what duplicity does, and I don't know what the rest of them do because they are not as efficient and will equate more wins for me or what my opponent's going to bring because they're trying to, one of their main outcomes or desired events is to win that game.
And exactly the 2 examples I was thinking of. I know time, I know duplicity for T-Sons. Same could be said for Custodian. Same could be said for Plague Bearers. Same could be said for many of those. We have an example now of a lean, mean, quite narrow in what it can do. I mean, there's not a huge amount of unit options in the World Eaters Codex, but what they do,
breaking Red's heart over there.
this is just the beginning, though. I fully expect there to be more waves.
Just let him keep going and digging his own grave. It's okay. But he's going to be coming back like, man, I can't beat these guys. What's wrong? All their mechanics are so dumb.
It feels very tuned. What we get is slim, lean, mean, no fat on the bone, but it feels quite tuned in that it does a few things exceptionally well. And I like that. I think that is good. If that heralds the wave of like the what we could possibly be seeing in 10th edition, this is total no forward or future thought, or I haven't seen anything or anything knowledge of the future. But if this that is what we're seeing in the future, I'm all for it, guys. Like we didn't use like 60%, 80% of our codexes anyway. Make them leaner, make them trim, beautiful, tuned animals, and I think everyone will be a lot happier.
On the last show, we didn't really talk about the jackals too much. Those are like the mortal taking place of what the cultist would be in the World Eater, like, I guess, codex.
And is it true they're being led by a space marine out of its armor?
So you can get the jackal pack leader, who is not everybody in the unit's toughness 3.
Dang.
That would have been cool, though.
It would have been cool. Because I thought that's what I was seeing when I saw it. Because that guy is, there's that one guy in the front, and he is jacked.
Stephen Box.
It's just Stephen Box.
Dang.
Oh, wow.
Have you seen those Goliath gangers, you know, from Necromundeth?
Oh, my lord. Unbelievable.
I have not read the lore entry, so you might be onto something. Or at least in theory or whatever. But there's the Jackal Pack Leader is strength 3, toughness 3. You can have 1 to 2 Dishonored in the unit, which are strength 4. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know if y'all had a much chance to evaluate them. You know, as a curious, because you look at the armies like this and you think, you know, am I going to need to be hanging back on any objectives? Like, what are my secondaries and stuff going to be? And am I going to need, you know, to conserve some points or whatever, take away from the overall push forward stuff? But I don't know that you do with this book.
So I'm not too sure, but like, do a lot of the stratagems and things, do they work on the little mortals as well? Or are they like keyword locked to their own thing so that they can't really receive many benefits from buffs and whatnot?
Let's see what their keywords are. Jackals are infantry, cultist, and jackals. So a lot of the stuff is core units and they're not core.
Dang. Because they actually have like a surprising amount of attacks, right?
Yep. And let's see how many points they are. I lost the page. Please stand by.
I thought they were like 70 points.
For the unit, for the whole unit?
Yeah.
Jackals are. Yeah, the 7 points a model. Minimum squad size of 10, maximum of 20. You can give them the Jackal Icon, Mauler, Chain Blade, or the Skull Smasher. Those are all 5-point upgrades each.
I mean, those all sound metal AF.
I'm just thinking, though, just load up the A-bound, load up some Zerks, and get to work.
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at some Rhinos and some Champions that I've got prepped as I wait for this combat patrol to drop. All of your points, Adam, are extremely valid to the extent that it is strong at what it's supposed to do. I think that they engineered it the way that they meant to, and I think it's going to play out exactly as one might predict on the table.
It does seem that like all the stratagems are right in line with not working on jackals, so you are taking them as
literally to just stay on your home objective.
Yeah, it's your cannon fodder. They look cool.
Yeah
curious.
We'll see. You say that now and then there's going to be some super, you know, high metal list that's got like 200 of them.
Never failing morale. Maybe that is the efficiency. What is 200? I mean, you can't. I mean, there's still that's only 1,400 points. 10 units of troops.
Yeah. I don't hate it.
My back hates it.
Yeah, you're going to be doing your planks for the months before.
Yeah.
Try playing that stuff.
I do miss a good Horde army. Like the Plague Zombies with Typhus. Loved that army for a while. Loved it. That's our show this week. It has been a pleasure. Stay tuned. Got a lot of cool stuff coming for the rest of this month. Well, yes, we do.
There's a little bit of a question there.
I was going to walk that back a little bit, but no, I'm committed. We got cool stuff coming for that. For the rest of the month. So what's the next big thing? Probably Adepticon planning towards. Can't wait to be talking about that. I want to be talking about Warhammer Fest and things coming up for that. I actually got a great question in email today, or it might have been yesterday, that was someone preparing to go to the Youngbloods event and wanted to know what they should be taking. And that's a great topic for a show, and I think we should talk about it as soon as we can. At the time of recording, the event rules are not posted for that.
Okay.
Like the packet is not posted for it yet.
And the T's and the C's, as we say.
Yeah, and I don't want to like give advice on like just the fundamentals when we can get like real specific once we have that packet in hand. So once we do, I think that's actually a great topic.
Me too.
Love it.
All right, everybody. We'll see y'all next week.
See you then.
See ya. Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Tenets demand you tune in next week for the greater good, of course.